We return this morning after a couple of weeks to our series that we have been dealing with for the last couple of months, looking at how to become a Christian, what a Christian is, how we can know that we are Christians. Excuse me. We've looked at the significance of the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. We've looked at the absolute necessity of the new birth. And then, in the light of that, we have been considering how we should live. If these things are true of us, how should we live? And we've had two sessions so far in looking at how we should live. First of all, we've seen that the whole of our lives are to be based on gratitude to God for what he has done for our souls in Jesus Christ. As I believe C.T. Studd once said, if Jesus Christ be God and died for me, there is nothing too great that I cannot do for him. We are to have a spirit of gratitude to God. But then secondly, we looked and saw that being grateful to God means to a degree recognizing our position and our standing. And so we should therefore also be humble, not to think of ourselves more highly than we ought to think, whether at home, at school, at work, in the church, wherever. We are to be sober in our judgments of ourselves and to count other people as better than ourselves. Not pushing ourselves forward and saying how wonderful we are, but rather thinking that other people are better than us and seeking to do them good. Well, we come this morning to consider a subject that is very close to the hearts of all of us, that follows on from this. And when I tell you what the subject is, some of you might say, ah, wondered when he'd get onto that one. You see, this religion, that's all it's about. Because today we're going to consider the subject of money and what we do with it. There's a box at the back that was made for us on the table for people to place their offerings in. And some people would say, well, why do we give? What's the point? What are we giving for anyway? Everybody gives. I remember when I used to go to church as a little boy and I'd take along my sixpence or sometimes even a shilling to put in the collection. It's what you did when you went to church. There wasn't any thought of why you did it. I'd walk out of the front door and my mother would press this coin into the palm of my hand and I would think, oh well, I know what this is for. And when the bag came round, I put it in the bag. It's what you did when you went to church. I didn't think why. I didn't think what it was for. It's just what you did. I wonder how many of you, when a plate, a bag is passed around, or when you're directed to a box at the back, you put some money in just because, well, that's the thing you do. We'll come back to that shortly. And the other question is, how are we to give? There is a place in North America called Akron, Ohio, where they have what is called the Cathedral of Tomorrow. That's a horrendous title. It's a pretty horrendous place. Everything is televised. If you can't get into the meeting, which holds a few thousand people, then you can see it on closed-circuit television. And it's broadcast to the surrounding area, so you can't miss it. And what do? They don't have a box, they don't have bags, they don't send plates round. They use buckets. And not one, they use quite a large number. When you've got thousands of people, you need a lot of buckets. And as the buckets go round, they say, now this is who you are to make your checks payable to. And if you want to give by credit card, this is what you do. And for those of you watching at home on television, here is the number you can call to make your credit card donation. And the bucket goes around fairly early in the meeting. This is so that they can quickly count up the money and decide whether or not it's enough. And there have been occasions when they decided, this isn't enough, send them around again. They told the people off, said, you've not given enough. Here come the buckets again. Now, this is who you make your checks payable to. You think I'm joking? This was on the television some years ago when there was a series called The Americans. And a whole program was devoted to this Cathedral of Tomorrow. It was awful. But that's what they do. Is that how we are to give? Is that to be the manner of our giving? What does that communicate to you? What it communicates to me is their concern is not people's souls and the preaching of the gospel. Their concern is building bigger and better buildings. Being able to broadcast into more homes so they can print up the telephone number that they can send their donations in and make more money and have a very nice lifestyle. They're not concerned about the glory of God. That's what this was communicating. Well, I can assure you that my motivation for preaching on money this morning is not in order to get you to dip into your pockets to put it in money into the box so that I will benefit from it. Because I don't, and that is not my intention. I intend to show you what the Christian's attitude is to be towards money and towards giving. And I hope that in the light of that, you will act accordingly. So what about giving? How are we to give? What are we to give and why are we to give it? Well, let's begin the place where you should always begin, in the beginning. Except this isn't Genesis, this is Leviticus. And it's the place where God tells the people what they are to give and how much they are to give. It's at the end of Leviticus, Leviticus 27, and this is the first command that God gave concerning giving to the people of Israel. Leviticus chapter 27 and verse 30. And all the tithe of the land, that is one tenth, the word tithe means a tenth, and all the tithe of the land, whether the seed of the land or the fruit of the tree, is the Lord's. It is holy to the Lord. If a man wants at all to redeem any of his tithes, he shall add one fifth to it. And concerning the tithe of the herd or the flock, or whatever passes under the rod, the tenth one shall be holy to the Lord. So that means whatever you had, a tenth of it was God's, and you gave it over to God. That meant giving it to the Levites, who had the charge of the service of the tabernacle at that time and later of the temple. They were to give strictly one tenth of what they had. So if you had born to your flock 100 lambs, then 10 of those were God's, and you had to pass them over. If by trade you made 100 shekels, which was their equivalent to a pound in those days, then you had to hand over 10 shekels. If you had 10 children, it wasn't just one of the 10, the first one was God's. But you were allowed to redeem the first child so that you weren't giving your child away to the temple. You could buy him back. A tenth of everything. Well, what was it for? Well, if you just turn over a few pages into Numbers, we read in Numbers chapter 18 that it was for the support of the priests and Levites. So that the people who worked in the temple, making the sacrifices, making the burnt offerings, burning the incense, and all the other things that they did, so that they had something to live on. Otherwise, where was their next meal coming from? Numbers 18, verse 21. Behold, I have given the children of Levi all the tithes in Israel as an inheritance, in return for the work which they perform, the work of the tabernacle of meeting. Hereafter the children of Israel shall not come near the tabernacle of meeting, lest they bear sin and die. But the Levites shall perform the work of the tabernacle of meeting, and they shall bear their iniquity. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations, that among the children of Israel they shall have no inheritance. For the tithes of the children of Israel, which they offer up as a heave offering to the Lord, I have given to the Levites as an inheritance. So this was their inheritance. This was how they lived. The tithes given by everybody went to the Levites so that the Levites could live. And if you read on, you'll then read in verse 26, speak to the Levites and say to them, when you take from the children of Israel the tithes which I have given you from them as your inheritance, then you shall offer up a heave offering of it to the Lord, a tenth of the tithe. So no one was exempt. Everybody had to give a tenth of what they had. If you like, that was the tax rate. In this country, the tax rate is 25% up to a certain level, then it goes up to 40%. In Israel, it was much more reasonable. It was 10% for everyone. If only. So that's the Old Testament. We could look at other examples. We haven't the time. What do we find in the New Testament? Well, if you turn first of all to Matthew 23, we find that the Pharisees followed this to the letter. Matthew 23 and verse 23. In this whole chapter, he is denouncing the Pharisees. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. They were so concerned to do what was right that they even tithed the herbs that grew in their garden. I don't know how many of you have got mint growing in your garden. A lot of people have a small patch of mint. They were so concerned to do what was right that even a tiny bundle, they would take a tenth of that and give us their tithe. The problem was, they were doing that. Jesus didn't condemn them for doing that. But they made that as almost the be-all and end-all, and they weren't doing the other things that were more important. So in giving, you can be pharisaical. This comes out much more clearly in Luke chapter 18. Luke chapter 18, we have this Pharisee that we've met before in the temple, standing there praying, God, I thank you I'm not like other men. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I possess. Clever me, aren't I wonderful? Jesus makes the point, not at all. Over in chapter 21, in the first few verses. Then he looked up and saw the rich putting their gifts into the treasury, doubtless walking up. I don't know how many of you have heard of Harry Enfield, a very unpleasant comedian, but he has a character that he portrays who is reportedly one of Thatcher's children, and he likes to walk around with a great big fist full of 10, 20 pound notes, wave them around and say, loads of money. And I can imagine that's what these people were doing here. Look at this! And then dropping it into the treasury, and people would be saying, look at how much money they're giving. Aren't they wonderful people? But we read also about a certain poor widow who doubtless stumbled up to the coffers, and she just dropped in 2 pence. That's all she got. She gave it all. And Jesus says, truly I say to you, this poor widow has put in more than all. For all these out of their abundance have put in an offering to God. She out of her poverty has put in all the livelihood she had. The Pharisees were concerned only about an outward show. One of the reasons why I'm very unhappy about the use of a bag or a plate, because there is always the danger. You might say, it's never my attitude, but there's always the danger. Someone might think, oh look, I'm putting a £5, a £10, a £20 note in. Much better to do it quietly. So that's the mistakes that the Pharisees made. How then are we to give? Well, the interesting thing is, as you read through the New Testament, not once are Christians commanded to tithe. The only references you'll find to tithing in the New Testament refer to the Old Testament practice. Christians are never told, just as Israel did in the past, you are to do today. What we're told, rather, is that we must have the right attitude in giving. And again, this all flows from what we saw a few weeks ago, that gratitude. Our giving is to be based on gratitude. The clearest passage in the whole of the New Testament on giving is 2 Corinthians chapters 8 and 9. We're not going to be exhaustive in going through this. I just want to point out a few things to you. It flows, first of all, from the fact that we've been converted. 2 Corinthians 8 verse 5. Speaking about the churches of Macedonia and their giving, and this they did, not as we had hoped, but first gave themselves to the Lord, and then to us by the will of God. Chapter 9 verse 15. Thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. This is the foundation. Gratitude to God because we've been saved. And then the thing to notice is that because it's on the basis of gratitude, it's not commanded. Verse 8 of chapter 8. I speak not by commandment, but I am testing the sincerity of your love by the diligence of others. How much you give is a measure of how much you love God. Interesting point, that. And when you give, because it's not commanded, you can't give legalistically. Which is why Paul says in chapter 9, verse 7, let each one give as he purposes, in his heart, not grudgingly. For God loves a cheerful giver. So if you come along and say, oh, here we go again, I've got to put some money in that box, then God does not approve of your gift. Just the same as the problem Abel had. Abel came along doubtless and said, here's this wonderful fruit I brought for you, God. And God says, no, I don't accept that. Who did I say? Did I say Abel? I meant Cain. Cain brought along this fruit. Doubtless thought it was wonderful, and God said, I don't accept it. Cain got angry. It's possible you may put some money in that box. You may give some other gift in some other way. And God doesn't accept it because your motivation for doing it hasn't been, God, I love you and I'm grateful to you, so I'm putting this money in here. You've come along and said, well, I suppose I've got to do this. If I don't, people will say I haven't put anything, and then what will they think? More concerned about what people think than God. Well, that's wrong. God doesn't accept your gift. So we're to give cheerfully, as we have determined. We are to give according to our means. There was the woman, the widow, who gave the mite. She gave more than she could afford. Well, the Bible doesn't say we've got to give everything. It says we give according to our means. Therefore, you earn more, you pay more. You earn less, you pay less. There's no strict measure by which you should give. Some people can afford 90%. Some people can only afford 2% of what they have. God's not concerned with the amount. God is concerned with your attitude in your heart. And that's what's important. You give according to our means. That's what Paul says in verse 3 of chapter 8. But bear witness that according to their ability, yes, and beyond their ability, they were freely willing. They worked out how much they could afford. And then they said, well, we're going to make a sacrifice and give some more. In the same chapter, verse 12. For if there is a willing mind, it is accepted according to what one has, and not according to what he does not have. I do not mean that others should be eased and you burdened, but by an equality, but now, at this time of your abundance, may supply their lack, that their abundance may also supply your lack, that there may be equality. This is how we're to give, according to our means, because, he says in verse 6 of chapter 9, but this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. He's not saying, you give lots of money to God and the windows of heaven will open, and the pennies, no, the pounds, the 20 pound notes will flutter down from the sky. That's not what he's saying. He's saying you will experience greater blessing the more you give, the more you make a sacrifice, the more you express your gratitude to God. Doesn't mean you'll have more money, it'll probably mean you have less. but you will know greater blessing. What are you looking for? God will supply all our needs. That's what Paul goes on to say. Quotes from the Old Testament. He is dispersed abroad. He is given to the poor. His righteousness remains forever. Now may he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food supply and increase, supply and multiply the seed which you have sown and increase the fruits of your righteousness. God supplies all our needs. We don't need to worry. We should give accordingly. Okay, you say, so that's how we give. And we are to think for ourselves and determine what we can afford. That's what we are to give. But what are we to give it for? We see this money going into this box, but where's it going to go? What's it going to be used for? Well, you get a variety of different attitudes in different churches. I know of churches where you would get the attitude in church meetings that the important thing is how much interest they're getting on the deposit. And that's all that seems to bother them. And that's worrying, especially when the church is large. The church is very large and they have quite a handsome income. And instead of thinking, right, how can we use this? They say, right, now, we can transfer it into that higher interest account. Now we've got enough, and so we'll get even more money coming in next year. Isn't that wonderful? Oh, how much better to actually make it work for God than to just have it sitting in a bank where it just accumulates interest. Let's seek to spend it in a way that increases our righteousness, that increases the kingdom of God, that spreads the gospel abroad. So that's what we're giving for. We should be giving for two things. Giving for Christian work, that is the support of preaching, teaching, of evangelism, of missionary work. You'll find this throughout the New Testament. Let me give you just a couple of examples in Galatians 6 and verse 6. Paul is speaking here. Let him who is taught the word share in all good things with him who teaches. So someone is preaching to you, someone's teaching to you. He deserves to be paid for that. Because that's very often, not always, I'm an example of the exception, but very often the person is supported solely by the gifts of those who he teaches. And 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 17, Paul says essentially the same thing, where he quotes from the Old Testament, that the elders who rule well be counted worthy of double honour, especially those who labour in the word and doctrine. For the scripture says, you shall not muzzle the ox, for it treads out the grain, and the labourer is worthy of his wages. So he says, there's nothing wrong in what is disparagingly called by some the professional ministry. Some people despise it and say, we should all be lay people. Well, I'm not in favour of that at all. I think we should all stand up. I have nothing to do with lay preachers, as you'll see at the moment. I stand up when I preach. I think laying down and preaching is very silly. There's nothing wrong with a professional ministry. It is a blessing to a church. But it has a man who is able to concentrate full time on studying the scriptures, understanding the scriptures, working out how he's going to present it to his congregation so that they will be blessed. I can speak from personal experience the difficulty there is in preparing two sermons a week. Now, people think two sermons a week is a double. Do that in 5 minutes. Well, I've heard preachers that prepare their sermons in 5 minutes, and I wouldn't want to listen to them very often, thank you very much. You get virtually nothing from them at all. Nothing wrong with supporting the ministry. It's what the scriptures teach. Secondly, we are to support the godly poor. I've got a whole string of references here, but I'll just give you a couple. Romans chapter 12. Paul speaks in verse 8 about giving. He who exhorts in exhortation, he who gives with liberality, right? So there he said how we are to give, and then he goes on in verse 13 to say what we are to give to. Distributing to the needs of the saints. And the New Testament, when it uses the word saint, never means a plaster cast of some man that lived several hundred years ago and probably wasn't a Christian anyway. When the New Testament talks about saints, it uses it as a synonym for Christian. You here this morning are a Christian, you are a saint. And so if you're going to refer to the letters of Saint Paul, then you should talk about yourself as being saint, whatever your name is. Distributing to the needs of the saints. And we could look at other passages, we won't for the sake of time, but you will read, for example, of Paul as he went round visiting many churches, as he preached. He made a collection for the relief of the saints in Jerusalem. They were in desperate need. So he was going around collecting this money. And it's against that background, the need of the saints, that we had that reading from Acts chapter 5 with Ananias and Sapphira. So you read the end of the previous chapter, and Barnabas brought along some money. He owned some houses, he sold them, and he brought them to the apostles, laid the money at their feet, so that there could be relief of the saints. He had more than he needed, he sold it and gave it for the needs of others. Ananias and Sapphira saw this and thought, wow, what a wonderful thing to do. People think he's great. We'll do this and people will think we're wonderful. So they sold some land, they kept back some of the money and said, here's all the money that we've got from the sale of the land. And of course, it was a lie. There's a warning here about boasting. It's not just that people might despise you if you boast and you're found out to be boasting. God might take your life. Because that's what happened to them. Great fear came upon the church as a result of this. And we should hear. And we should fear. And ask ourselves very carefully about how we give. So, what's our attitude? Our attitude should be one of gratitude to God, thankfulness for what he's done. And we should give accordingly. And in our giving, the Bible says, Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount, that's Matthew 6 verse 2, that our left hand should not know what our right hand is doing, let alone what the people around us should know what's doing. People shouldn't know how much you give. You should just do it between you and God. Part of the reason for the box. For some of us, we don't even need to use the box because we have bank accounts. And you can take out standing orders to pay directly into the church's account. Indeed, if you do it that way, then you should make sure that you covenant your gift. Because if you covenant your gift for a period of 4 years, that means that the church can reclaim the tax that you've paid on that money. And so you can increase your giving without increasing your giving. You give an extra third of what you give in that way. If you're paying tax, I would urge you very strongly to covenant that giving. That way the church gets it instead of the inland revenue. So our giving is to be in secret, but it's to be sacrificial. It's to be like the widow. It's to be according to our means. If we lived in days such as John Wesley lived in, he lived on £26 a year, and the rest he gave away, then when we have a pay rise, as John Wesley did, went up from £26 to £28 a year. He didn't think, right, now what can I spend this on? He thought, great, more money that I can give away. We live in different times. But we need to think about that, and we need to consider it. We need to consider whether we are more concerned about God's glory or our comfort. We're to give cheerfully, secretly, sacrificially. And underlying all this, we are not to love money. Because if we love money, Paul says in 1 Timothy 6:10, money is a root of all kinds of evil. Sorry, the love of money, not money itself. The love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And if you love money, then you won't give sacrificially because you'll think, oh, but I want to keep it. You've seen pictures of the miser who counts out his money and it's lovely and then he puts it back in the box again. We're not to be like that. But all this is useless unless, first of all, we've given ourselves to God. When we give money, Here we are not paying God for what God's done. We're not repaying him for what he's done for us. We're expressing our gratitude. Salvation is free. We can't buy God off. There are some people who go to church and think that by going to church and putting money in, right, that's paid off God for the week. Now I can forget God and carry on living. No, no, that's not right. You can't buy God off because God owns you. You belong to God. Everything you have is God's. As it says in the Book of Common Prayer, all things come from thee, and of thine own we have given you. It's all God's. And we should remember that. We should remember also that a man's spiritual position does not depend on his wealth. Some of the most godly people in the world, in the history of the world, have been paupers. We should remember that. Don't think that by getting lots of money, by becoming rich, you will become more godly. It's quite possible the opposite will happen. So in our giving, let us seek to follow what the scriptures teach. And by our lives, by our giving, let us show our love and gratitude to God for all that he's done for us. And let us seek to do it cheerfully and for the good of others.